Speakeasy.
Words.
Lingo.
Speakeasy.
Language.
Speakeasy on ABC Radio Perth.
Speakeasy, Daniel Midgley.
Speak easily.
Ah, much better English.
Good
Mucho
morning.
Better.
Thank you.
Good morning. How
Hi.
Are you?
Happy Maundy Thursday. It's Maundy Thursday, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Now,
well, we know it is. Jeff's doing an outside broadcast today, his drive program.
St. Cuthbert's Church in Darlington.
That's right.
Is where he'll be broadcasting. So go visit. He'll be there with the Holy Heretics. I believe he's baking hot cross buns. Is that? Did I hear correctly that Jeff
well,
was
you
baking?
If those words were said out loud, you would have heard them.
Look forward to Jeff bringing some hot cross buns homemade into the office
tomorrow.
For us.
Wow.
I put an Easter egg on everyone's desk this morning. Now, the first time I heard the term Maundy Thursday.
Somehow when you do something like that and you have to announce it to everybody, I think it loses a bit of its shine. There's something sort of not quite Christian about what you've just done.
It was just so I had an excuse to eat some chocolate at 6 o'clock this morning. I had never heard the term Maundy Thursday until I heard Jeff talking about it.
Right.
What does it mean?
Okay, well, it's a funny little word that only occurs in this one context. It's been used for a long time. Middle English had a word, monde, which was the word for the Last Supper. And the reason that it meant that, you know, that's when Jesus gathered all his peeps into the upper room, had a bit of a meal. And it comes from Latin mandatum. Mandatum eventually worked its way into Monday. And the reason why is that that is what they call the service on the Thursday. Mandatum novum dovobis, a new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you. Mandatum.
Or,
so it comes from command. I command you. I command you to love.
Or Last Supper Thursday.
Last Supper Thursday.
Okay. I'd never heard of it.
Neither have I.
No?
We never talk about it.
So that's why it's food related.
Yeah.
Guess so. I, you know, you never hear about people saying, oh, at the Maundy. Which
can they you spell Maundy, please? Supper. Sorry, because I'm not familiar with it.
M-A-U-N-D-Y.
Mandy with a U.
Mandy with a U. Or Maundy. Monday with...
Yeah. A sort of a Cockney accent.
With an A-U and no A.
Yeah.
Moving the letters around a little bit. That didn't work, did it?
That will stick in my mind, that explanation.
Me too.
Daniel Midgley is here until 7, and he's here to take your questions this morning. Just general language questions, no particular theme.
Yep.
1-300-222-720 or text on 0437-922-720.
Before we go there, a lot of people feel like Good Friday comes from God Friday. Have you heard people say this?
No.
I have heard people say this, that good and God are somehow related, and it's not. The two words are come from completely different neighborhoods. Seems that good comes from Proto-Germanic goda, meaning fitting or suitable, and nobody knows where the word God comes from, possibly Proto-Indo-European gut, that which is invoked. No, it doesn't come from God Friday. It just means that Jesus died and some people thought that was good.
Okay.
You got to admire the people that take the long view.
Yeah.
You know.
Now.
That's interesting. The word God, we don't know where the word God really comes from.
There are a few guesses. It could be a word for a kind of libation that you pour on the ground. Pour one out for the big guy.
Right.
Yeah, but it goes back a very long way.
Yeah.
Speaking of God, let me take you to Paris.
Mm.
Yes.
Notre Dame Cathedral. Now, I was picked up yesterday because I said the Notre Dame Cathedral.
Yeah. Mm.
What are the rules around that?
Yeah, Barb says, good morning, you two. While speaking to Daniel, please ask him about the Notre Dame Cathedral. You are saying the Our Lady Cathedral continually, just like people who say the HMAS Sydney, which would be the Her Majesty's. It sounds funny if you say the and her or the and our together. So what are you supposed to do? I tried to have a look for this, and I found a few things. First of all the style guides that I could find, like Chicago and AP, they are silent on this matter. The ABC's own style guide says nothing about whether you should say the Notre Dame Cathedral or Notre Dame Cathedral. It seems that Notre Dame University does actually say the Notre Dame University. Their mission is to build a Notre Dame that is bigger and better than ever. So they go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
French people use Le Notre Dame for things like hotels and things, mm-hmm. so they don't have any problems with using Le and Notre, the Our, in the same breath. And then I started thinking about the baseball team in the States, the Los Angeles Angels, which literally means the Angels.
Oh, of course, Lockett. So, yeah. The angels.
Here's my take.
It
looks like there isn't any sort of guidance on this one from any style guide. I know you may draw the appropriate inference. It looks like when we are using foreign words, you get a bit of a pass if the word in the foreign language means the. It's no big deal if you say the and then the word for the or something like that. So I'm calling this one not a thing.
What about HMAS Sydney, for example? Because I think that used to be in the ABC style guide where we were told not to put the in front of it.
Oh, really?
I remember that from a long time ago.
See, I was working in commercial TV then. We had no rules.
Yeah.
Was this in the journalism school?
Yeah. And at the journalism school, well, like I remember Earl Reeve, the gorgeous Earl Reeve, who was the head of our department, he sort of sat us down day one and came up with a few things.
Laid down the law, did he?
Itinerary, not itinerary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Secretary, not secretary.
What else was there? Impenetrable? It's true, you know, the style guide for the ABC does say never precede HMAS with the.
There we go.
HMAS. So I guess there is a bit of a precedent. So I guess if you're taking that advice forward, you could say, don't say le notre dame.
Do you know what? I'm dropping the. Okay. The. It's gone. It's gone.
I'm sure it's most correct.
Let's move on. There are lots of questions to get through. Scapegoat.
Scapegoat. Colin asks, let's see. The original, does this always imply innocence? The original goat sacrificed for the sins of others, you know, they used to put all their sins on a goat, an innocent goat, and then drive it into the wilderness where it would die of exposure, and thereby they would avoid responsibility for their actions. So the original goat was innocent. However, if you have a group of individual people who are guilty of some transgression and two or three are picked out to be punished to be made an example of, you have guilty scapegoats, or am I using the term scapegoat incorrectly? Your opinion is welcome to resolve a little disagreement. Oh, I love these. Can I just say, I am so grateful to people who think that I am worth asking questions to. It's lovely. As far as I can tell, the word scapegoat implies innocence. And the reason I know that is because I looked at loads of examples and people seem to use it that way. That's what people do. Can you have somebody referred to as a guilty scapegoat? It seems odd. It's a bit like having a married bachelor or a square circle. You can say it, but does it actually mean anything, or have you changed? I was unable to find very many references to guilty scapegoats, except for a band out of Draper, Utah in the USA called the Guilty Scapegoats, which I didn't even listen to. And the fact that that's their name implies that maybe they're having some fun with it, a little bit of a joke. So I probably wouldn't say it.
Another one off the list that you left over from last week, and then we're going to go to some from today. Lots of people texting in on 0437 922 720. But you can call as well. Daniel quite likes speaking to you. And if there are children listening, you're on school holidays. Mm. One thing Daniel particularly likes is proving your teacher wrong.
I do.
So if you have a question about something your teacher's taught you that you're not convinced about, Daniel's your man. Now, Michael wants to know why we say remuneration instead of renumeration.
He says, I always say the latter because it sounds like number, as in counting money, right? A number of coins or something like that. Okay, so remuneration might be the act of counting or numbering something again, but remuneration is the one we use when we talk about getting money back for something. It comes from Latin re, which is back, and munerare, which is to give. But I think this shows a really interesting thing about language. I'm going to drop a couple of terms on you. Can I drop some terms?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Number one is reanalysis, and that is people often change things in language because they make more sense that way. That's how a hamburger became a ham burger. Have you ever asked yourself, why is it a hamburger because there's no ham in it? Where's the ham? Well, it wasn't a ham burger. It was a hamburger, a sandwich from Hamburg, I guess.
Oh.
So we reanalyzed it. And then we get chicken burger and steak burger and things like that. But that's not the way it was. But that's okay. And the second term I'm going to drop on you is metathesis. I love metathesis. That means twiddling the order of the sounds. So it's totally normal to say, you know, to say remuneration instead of remuneration, even though I don't think it's very common.
Yeah, I think I hear remuneration more.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay, we'll have to check that out. I mean, there's lots of examples of words. Like in Spanish, there was a word tronado, which meant a really bad storm, from tronar, to thunder. But then when English borrowed a word, we didn't call it a tronado. We called it a...
tornado.
We swapped it, right? Mm. So metathesis. Maybe the fact that it turns helped that along. But it's a totally normal way to get words. A bird was a brid and a horse was a hross long ago. But we
A horse was a hross, of course.
Let's a couple of quick questions because there's lots coming in.
I want to say something very quickly.
Go for it.
Hamburger. In my memory, I went to a place in the United States, St. Louis, and they had the World Fair there when that was, the World Exhibition.
World Expo, yeah.
Yeah, which was huge, and it was in the early 20th century, and the person there was making hamburger or meat patties, and they ran out of plates, and he ran to the baker and asked him to provide him with rolls. And he put the burger between two pieces of bread and called it a hamburger, and that was where it was first served.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Is that the same place?
It's an urban myth. So they can have a sign saying, welcome to where? St. Louis.
Yeah.
Home of the hamburger.
Yeah.
Was that the same place that the ice cream guy, they were also selling ice cream and they ran out of cups, so they asked the waffle maker next door.
To make cones. That's exactly right.
Same place,
same time.
That place had some real supply issues, okay?
I've got a funny feeling they might have had something to do with the hot dog as well.
Sure.
But you can look it up. You can look it up. I mean, you shouldn't look it up.
And maybe that was the same place where they were just having, I don't know, a bit of cheese and pepperoni and ran out of plates and going, oh, give me a pizza base.
If there's a listener in bed that has the energy, just do a quick search on St. Louis Expo or something like that, 1904 or whatever, hamburger, and call in. We'd love to hear the story.
I'm going to throw quick questions at you because we need to get through so many.
Ready.
Harassment or harassment?
Gary says, I grew up with harassment, but now I seem to be in the minority, and it's harassment. I took a look at a website called youglish.com, which looks through YouTube video annotations, takes you right to that word, and plays that word. There are hundreds of examples of harassment, and on the Australian videos, I only looked at Australia, everything was harassment. Everybody always said harassment. There were no instances of people saying harassment. So it looks like that's what people do in Australia.
Daniel, can you please explain myself as opposed to I or me?
Oh, I love that one. So if you have a problem, please speak to Craig or myself. So it's just a way of saying things a little bit more formally. Maybe it sounds funny because usually we think of it as reflexive. You can only, like, I made a sandwich for myself.
Yeah.
But sometimes we speak a little bit indirectly when we're trying to be formal. Don't tell me, tell myself. And now I sound very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting example of reanalysis there.
Here's a good one. What about flesh something out? I often hear flush something out.
That's a different thing.
That's a good one.
That's after a bad meal.
Well, let's take it into the boardroom and see if we can flush this thing out.
That's good.
That's a really good example of an egg corn. An egg corn is a phrase that isn't quite how you'd say it, but it's it makes kind of sense.
It's like your cameraman stories. They're just mixing up expressions slightly.
Yes.
You know?
I love egg corns. If you want to check out egg corns, just look up egg corn on the net. There's the egg corn database, and there is an entry for flesh out or flush out. But there's also fledge out. Some people say that. Let's see if we can fledge this out.
Why flesh out, though?
Well,
you know, put meat on the bones.
You've got the skeleton of an idea, but it's time to flesh it out.
Flesh it out.
Earl Reeve also taught us apartheid is the right pronunciation. People say apartheid, apartheid.
Yep.
We were taught it's apartheid. And that's the only way to say it correctly.
Well, of course, when you get things from other languages, we tend to Englishize them.
Mm.
So you should expect a little bit of that. But that's interesting to hear that that's how Afrikaans speakers say it.
Off or just off? Thank you from Gary and June Denner.
Is there something off?
Get off of.
Get off of it. Get off it.
Or just get off it.
You know, some people feel like you shouldn't have the of. They get quite cross about that extra little preposition because they feel like we must always speak with maximum efficiency, never saying any extra words because, of course, we are robots, you know. But sometimes with prepositions, oh my goodness, prepositions like of and to and things, those are so so squiggly. You know, we sometimes do throw in extra ones if it helps make our meaning more clear. So, yeah, we do hear sometimes off of. I'm not a, you know, I say them both.
Okay, 2 minutes away from news. Daniel Midgley is with us, the host of podcast Talk the Talk. He joins us every Thursday.
Cozzy, this is great. Why do we say when someone dies, the late so-and-so? What are they actually late for?
I do not know the answer to this one.
Do you want to take that one on notice? That's interesting.
I think I do. I also have been looking at full bore.
Oh, yes. It's coming at you full bore.
It's coming at you full bore.
Is it that B-O-A-R? Is it like...
Well,
like,
that's what I like thought it was, like a pig coming at you full bore.
Dennis says, I'll give it to him full bore. Where does this come from? What even is a bore? A bore was the hole in the gun that you shoot down, I guess because you had to bore it. But it's also the hole in a pipe later that the water runs through. So if you're going full bore, that's all the water. But then starting about 1927, people started saying that you could run your engine full bore. And that one came from the Bulletin in Sydney, first modern usage. So it is Australian.
Got time for another quick one from Helen?
Maybe.
Why do we use the word pre so much, as in pre-diabetic, pre-weight?
Pre is one of those incredibly useful morphemes. A morpheme is a part of a word that has meaning, and it's very useful. There are a number of other things that we could use, like ante, but pre fills the bill. Love it.
We love you, mate. Lovely to have you in here.
Thank you.
We'll see you next Thursday.
I'll be here.